Welcome to Reflection Time, the program that looks at world events and everyday issues through the eyes of the scriptures, and as well shares with you some inspirational music. Welcome to Reflection Time. We're glad that you've joined us on the program today. We're going to carry for you the regular lineup. We'll have the Lifeline production segment as well as an amazing fact for you. Shortly, in our first half hour, we're going to carry on with the discussion we had starting last week, which was based on the news of this past summer, which was the release of the encyclical by the papacy, which coincidentally happened during the funeral of Michael Jackson. Just when all eyes were on Michael Jackson, guess what? Something else important was taking place on another corner of this earth. But first, I'm going to play for you a selection by local artist Bruce Moss entitled No Compromise When Babylon Falls.
There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. When the king of Babylon made a decree that every soul would have to agree to bow down and worship his image of gold, they didn't obey, so we're told. There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Then Nebuchadnezzar in his fury and rage commanded that these young men be bound and gagged. He heated the furnace seven times more than that furnace was heated before. But there was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Then Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego fell down bound into that furnace, you know. The heat of the fire had no power to singe, for the Son of God was with them, amen. There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Someday soon now both you and I will be ordered to compromise lest we should die. When the music is playing and we're not alive, will we stand out from the crowd? There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on? When Jesus returns in the power of God, will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? Make no mistake, Christ is coming again. In the power and glory of God he will reign. The power of darkness will come to an end, and only the light of the Lord will remain. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on when Jesus returns in the power of God? Will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? God will create and make everything new, and all of creation will have their reward. From Sabbath to Sabbath and every new moon, all flesh will gather to worship the Lord. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on when Jesus returns in the power of God? Will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? Listen, my friend, we must trust and obey, for every commandment is holy and true. Let nothing be added or taken away from the law God has given to me and to you. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on when Jesus returns in the power of God? Will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? Wake up, my children, the time is at hand. The King of all kingdoms is coming again. So put on the armor of Jesus the Lamb, and you will be able to stand in the end. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on when Jesus returns in the power of God? Will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Are we willing to stand for the Lord? Are you willing to stand for the Lord?
We often hear in the news periodically how red wine is beneficial for our health. But is there something that is probably even a little bit better than red wine? Something close? Well, on Lifeline Productions, Dr. Elmar Sakala is going to share that information with us.
Can grape juice provide the same benefits to your heart as red wine? This is Dr. Elmar Sakala for Lifelines. Dark purple Concord grapes have something in common with red wine, resveratrol. It's a substance found in the skin and seeds of grapes that recent studies suggest benefit for a healthy heart. Both red wine and grape juice also have antioxidants called flavonoids, which increase your HDL, good cholesterol, and lower the risk of clogged arteries. In other words, red and purple grape juices most likely offer the same heart-healthy benefits that red wine does, such as lowering the risk of blood clots and lowering LDL, bad cholesterol.
Lifelines, a public service of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, provides practical answers to common health questions. For more free health tips, call 877-LIFE-TIPS or visit vibrantlife.org.
So based on that information, why not drink red grape juice? You won't damage your liver, you won't lose your brain cells, and you won't suffer from a hangover when you're trying to study. Next, we'll have an amazing fact regarding the Liberty Bell. The Liberty Bell, sometimes called the Bell of the Revolution or Old Independence, has been an enduring symbol of American patriotism, but it had a rough beginning. Originally cast in London in 1752 and weighing more than 2,000 pounds, the Liberty Bell arrived in Philadelphia in August, but it cracked during its first test ringing. It was then melted down in Philadelphia and recast to make a second bell in June 1753. Unfortunately, this new bell was deemed to have poor tone, thought to have been caused by too much copper, so it was melted down again the same year and recast to make the third and final bell. This is the celebrated Liberty Bell that exists today, which is made mostly of copper and tin with small amounts of lead, zinc, arsenic, gold, and silver. It hangs from what is believed to be its original yoke, made from 200 pounds of American elm. When struck, the bell sounds the note of E flat. The bell was rung on July 8, 1776 to announce the signing of the Declaration of Independence, proclaiming America's freedom. During the Revolutionary War, the bell was placed on a wagon, moved 60 miles west to Allentown, and hidden in the floorboards of the Zion Reformed Church, all in an effort to keep it from falling into British hands, who would have no doubt melted it down to make cannons. After the war, it was rung every July 4th until sometime around 1835 when it cracked again. No one knows exactly when the Liberty Bell cracked the second time. It is a mystery of history. Today, the 250-year-old icon is a popular attraction in Philadelphia and is only rung on special occasions. Did you know that the bell was first called the Liberty Bell not by patriots of the Revolution, but by the abolitionists fighting slavery? They chose this name because of the Bible inscription on the bell from Leviticus 25, verse 1, that reads, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." In retrospect, it was a remarkably apt metaphor for a country that was literally split over slavery. Jesus said that whosoever commits sin is a slave of sin. So how much does real liberty cost? And the question one might ask is, today, is religious liberty in jeopardy? In our studio again, we've got Mario, our co-host today, and we want to look at the issue of the release of the encyclical from this past summer by the papacy. And in our program last week, we mentioned that there was a number of key points that were highlighted within the document that have tremendous effects on all countries of the world. And one of those has to do with religious liberty. One of the points within the encyclical stated that the Pope says that this new political authority must make its decisions based on spiritual values. Now, this is not something new. The Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. History repeats itself. We often hear that. Can we look back in history to a point in which spiritual values were brought in to effect through a civil authority, and what were its effects? Mario, maybe you could go back and fill us in a little bit.
Well, I think we have the history books to confirm what happens when a state uses religion as a right hand to enforce, or a church, for that matter, I should say, uses the civil authority to get through its
agenda.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we certainly have that during Jesus' time. Mm-hmm. When you look at Jesus' persecution and crucifixion, you have one side the Roman power, the civil authority, but really when you look in underline, who instigated that and used that civil power, mm-hmm. was a religious body.
Yeah. And since that time, the history certainly shows us the effect of that during the Dark Ages, when we see the combination of the civil, the state, and the church,
mm-hmm.
and the tyranny that existed during that time period. And the separation of church and state was to protect the people from the tyranny. But like I say, things go full circle. Once that persecution was taking place during the Dark Ages, people were fleeing that into the newfound country, which was United States,
mm-hmm.
and they soon realized, even though they brought some of that with them, there were people who stood up and said, we can no longer use the church to enforce the state, or the state to enforce the church. And because of that, that was a founding principle of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of their freedom. But now people are standing up and saying, oh, no, we have to do away with that now. And now we see this being brought up within the document, within the encyclical.
Yes. And I think what you're referring to, America being based on the two principles there, we find that in Revelation 13, where it says that, he says that he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. He came out of earth, so we know that the Bible talks about woman who flees to wilderness. I mean, when you read the Bible and you see the history, it just overlaps. You know, I say history is the story of God's history to us of what's happening in the world before time. He's tell us that so. And so I thought it's interesting that the terminology is being used here and that we see in history is exactly that we can see in the Bible.
Yeah. And when it says, you know, lamb-like beast that spoke like a dragon, the dragon, you know, I mean, the Bible is, you know, very symbolic, you know, when with regards to prophecy. You know, the dragon, the Bible is very clear, is, you know, Satan.
Yes.
So.
And it's interesting that it says that the dragon gave this beast its power, seat, and authority, when we see that certainly demonstrating during the Dark Ages, where, you know, Satan always works through a civil power, whether they know it or not know it. Deception is always so that a power might think they're doing good, but in the end, they might be serving a different power in this great controversy that we're looking in this world between Jesus and Satan.
So when it comes down to it, the Bible tells us that separation from between church and state will fall.
Yes.
We see that being proposed now by the papacy through the encyclical. That's one point that was highlighted. Is there something else you want to comment on?
Yeah, I just thought of something. In Daniel 2, everyone studying the Bible recognize there's a statue in Daniel 2. It outlines quickly the history of the world. And I thought interesting, if you come down to the feet, it says in Daniel 2:34, "Thou sawest that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon the feet. There were iron and clay and broke them to pieces." And just as you said, when you look at prophecy, this stone is Jesus Christ coming back, destroying these worldly powers. But it's interesting, you use iron and clay, two ingredients that will be at the feet that holds this statue together. And when you're looking at Bible prophecy, the clay represents religion and iron represents, well, we're going to look at iron power, Rome, for instance, a civil authority that comes together. But when Jesus comes back, he destroys that, what is joined together at the end of time.
Yeah, very powerful. So another element that was brought forward in the document was the idea of a global government. So Pope Benedict is calling for a new world political authority to fix the problems that plague planet Earth. You know, I've heard a comment, you know, out of the United States saying we have more problems than solutions now. But the Pope is saying we can solve our problems if we have one global government. And who might lead that global government?
Well, you know, but the book of Revelation is very clear to show us who the end time players are, so to speak. And again, we go back to Revelation 13. He identifies this, and also Daniel 7 we should bring in here, that if you take Daniel 7 and Revelation 13, it gives us several criteria how you can identify this power. And Bible history students have known for a long time, and by identifying even Martin Luther, we didn't take and point Rome as the Antichrist, but he used the Bible to identify it.
So when we look at the situation in the world right now, there's really only two superpowers right now, the papacy and United States.
Yes.
Is the papacy becoming more Protestant, which the United States was based on, or is the United States falling more in line with the papacy?
And there's a biblical principle or a law in the Bible that says, what you behold, that you become. And so true, by beholding, you're changing to that. You're influenced by that you uptake in. And I think it's interesting, by Rome, by Protestant going back to Rome, they're being in one way deceived, thinking that Rome has changed. But Rome never changes, because Rome is embodiment of false Christ. So when Christ says, I do not change, Rome is also making that statement on saying, we do not change. And they will take on prerogative as a leader. We need a new world political authority, which better than one that actually wrote the blueprint.
And it also says a political authority based on spiritual values, and that these spiritual values cannot be derived from just any religion, since not all religions are equal.
And this is found on page 55 of this letter.
So they're not all equal. Which one would have the preeminence? Obviously, the papacy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And if you look at through the history of just the last, I would say, 10 years, there's been a movement of religious bodies coming together with Rome, coming back in an ecumenical dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's good to dialogue, but they don't realize what's happening, that they're actually giving their homage to papacy as the authority of all religions on this world.
Yeah. Because they're saying that it must be based on spiritual values and on morals as well.
Mm-hmm.
What government in the world can, you know, say we have morals that we abide by?
Mm.
None other than the papacy.
Exactly. And it's interesting too, when you look at papacy, there's no other religious person who can go to the UN and speak to the UN assembly with authority as the papacy can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
That's both political and religious.
Yeah. And when we look at the situation, the problems we face in the world, not only does the encyclical address the moral, the spiritual decline in the world, but what's the other big issue that we face today? The economy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he has to address that one as well. The church must influence all areas of society because God must have a place in the public realm, specifically in regard to its cultural, social, economic, and particularly its political dimensions. Mm-hmm. So here we see the church guiding the state.
Yes.
You know, we see the separation of the church and state falling. The two become one.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the Bible, Revelation talks about a woman who rides a beast.
Mm-hmm.
A woman represents a church, and this church is an apostate church, not a true church that God picks as well in Book of Revelation. But this church rides the beast. A beast is a power.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that this religious body actually has a political as well aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, people will say, well, how is it possible for the papacy to bring this about? You know, though they might be they might have intentions to do this, but how do they bring it about? They have no arms on their part. They have no, you know, army. They have no, but you know, look at the role that they played. I mean, it was public knowledge reported by the mainstream news magazines, the role that the papacy played with regards to the fall of communism.
Oh, yes.
They didn't need an army for that. It's and all done politically.
Yeah, I think most people don't realize that Daniel 11, because they're looking at the very last verses there from 40 to 45, is actually showing the time we're living in, including showing that we don't have no time to go into the details of that.
Yeah.
But if people write to us, we're glad to send them some information.
Yeah. Yeah, Daniel 11:40 gets into that.
Yeah,
follow.
And the fall of communism was an eye-opener, and that was 1989.
Mm-hmm.
So since 1989, where we're now, a lot of things have happened. And falling into place just the way the Bible depicts it.
Yeah. So another point that was brought out in the encyclical was the fact where it says this political authority must have, interesting, real teeth and be vested with the effective power to enforce laws around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this has a global impact. And I find that interesting, Mario. Must have real teeth. What significance does that tie into the scriptures? Because the Bible refers to a beast, a country, a power that has iron teeth. Where is that?
Well, it's interesting that you would find in Daniel 7. 7 describes it, but 7:19 gives us a description what it is. It says, "Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which devoured broken pieces and stamped the residue with his feet." Mm-hmm. Pretty strong words here, but it's depicting the rise of pagan Rome on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that pagan Rome was the institution that crucified Jesus. Rome was the civil power at the time. But we also know, as we read continuing Daniel and the special revelation, that the papal Rome was taken out, so to speak, was replaced by papal Rome during the time of 400-500 A.D. there.
Mm-hmm.
And the prominence of papal Rome coming in and being seated on the seven hills of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that describes also in the Bible.
Yeah.
And I think this bringing out the iron teeth, you know.
Right.
So you need a reform to be able to influence all nations, which means United Nations will eventually have to, or will be, reformed. A change, as President Obama is blowing And I think we're going to see that as well, where nations would have to adopt new legislations and new rules within the United Nations to be able to enforce some of these current events. And quick decisions would have to be made.
Yeah, because people, you know, these world leaders are calling for reform within the United Nations. You know, people, you know, often refer to United Nations as a body that, you know, has no weight, you know, does nothing. But you know, under the right circumstances, you know, quick changes can be made, and their real teeth can come through the United Nations.
Yeah, because it says there in that quote you just made, so that the concept of the family of nations can acquire real teeth. The concept of the family of nations is United Nations.
Yeah.
So it's pinpointing that United Nations need to be reformed, and we're talking about the different walls that need to be come down. There's only two walls left. Walls left, right?
And it's interesting too when you get into Revelation, it talks about the 10 kings will rule 1 hour with the beast.
Yes.
It's interesting when you look at United Nations. The United Nations breaks the world down into 10 components, 10 geographical areas.
Indeed, so yeah, a lot of people might not realizing, but we're moving towards that, where some of the economic finances and so on are trying to be divide up, so we don't have this turmoil in the world market as we have today.
Yeah, so the Bible is very clear that the world just before Jesus comes will be governed by one power. That power will be the papacy, but it's interesting. Before Christ comes, it says this power will come to its end as well. And then, you know, and then we see the falling of the seven last plagues and the return of Christ. But, I mean, that's a different study altogether. Yeah. But, you know, the Bible is very clear on what it predicts.
Yeah, and I also thought you mentioned about the fall of Soviet communism. You know, what was really underlying there was the labor unions. And I think that's, you know, that's brought as well in this letter. It says labor unions are to be empowered to play a decisive role in the New World Order, page 25. And, you know, it's interesting that we are seeing the unions coming back into power, labor unions especially.
Yeah, yeah. Much more than we even see now.
Oh, yes.
To a much greater degree. And it also, within the encyclical, it talks about the redistribution of wealth from the rich to the poor. I mean, that's been a teaching within, I guess, Jesuit philosophy, you know, for a number of years. But we see that, you know, cropping up here within the encyclical again, that, you know, the wealth must be redistributed. Because, you know, when we, you know, to a certain degree, when we look in the world, they say, boy, there's some very greedy wealthy people. Not that all wealthy people are greedy by any means. But, you know, we see very broad ends to the spectrum. You know, there's very poor, there's very, you know, wealthy people. It's calling for the, and on the surface it seems like a noble you know, initiative, but when you force people to give up their wealth to redistribute it to the poor, you know, the Bible really doesn't endorse that.
No, it's an enforced rather than that heartfelt giving.
You know, God, when He's calling for us to change, he tries to woo us. He tries to work within us to convince us to change. You know, He never forces us to do anything. There's no coercion on God's part. But yet, you know, there seems to be some suggested within the encyclical. But Mario, our time has unfortunately quickly come to an end. We've sort of skimmed over a lot of the highlights that were mentioned within the document. If anybody has any questions or comments on this subject, certainly you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. If you stay tuned for the second half of our program, Doug Batchelor will be speaking more on this issue. So I invite you to listen and stay tuned. Any final comment, Mario?
Well, I think we're going to tell everyone we're going to follow up with this. G20 is going to be more meetings, and there's more things leading up with Iran now, and you know, there'll be more things in the news that we will have a look in, and a look from the book of Revelation specifically.
Yeah, so stay tuned over the coming weeks. We hope you've enjoyed the presentation. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. Remember this week to take time to reflect on God's Word, and whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.